Let's take our Bibles, go to Genesis chapter 27. If you're familiar with this story, we'll read it. And it's good to get all the details in our head, because there's no way we can expound or exposit every verse in this chapter in the time that we have this morning. But we need to read it. We need to think through it, and we need to be able to be familiar with it as we reference these events this morning. Genesis chapters 27 is really bordered just before it by verses 34 and 35. It introduces the story with Esau. Esau gaining wives. And really the story goes down through chapter 28, down through verses 8 and 9, once again with Esau taking a wife. And so this story really extends from chapter 26, verse 34, all the way down through chapter 28, verse 9. We'll read that section this morning. Genesis 26, verse 34. When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, and they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son?" And he answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field, and hunt game for me, and prepare for me delicious food such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat. My soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two good young goats so that I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself, and not a blessing." His mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice, and go bring them to me." So he went and took them and brought them to his mother. His mother prepared delicious food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garment of Esau, her older son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. The skins of the young goats she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. And she put the delicious food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son, Jacob. So he went in to his father and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of my game that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" He answered, "Because the Lord your God granted me success." And Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near, that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not." So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, who felt him, and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him, because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. He said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He answered, "I am." Then he said, "Bring it near me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." So he brought it near to him, and he ate. And he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him. And Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, "See the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you and blessed be everyone who blesses you." As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" He answered, "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau." And Isaac trembled very violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it all before you came. And I have blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed." As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully. He has taken away your blessing." Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he's taken away my blessing." Then he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I have made him lord over you, and all his brothers I have given to him for servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you now, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck." Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of you both in one day?" Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be?" And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and directed him, "You must not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Arise, go to Padanaram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham." Thus Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padanaram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob and Esau's mother. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padanaram to take a wife from there, and that as he blessed him, he directed him, "You must not take a wife from the Canaanite women," and that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and gone to Padanaram. So when Esau saw that the Canaanite women did not please Isaac his father, Esau went to Ishmael and took as his wife, besides the wives that he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth. Wow, we're familiar with the story, but it's ugly to read, isn't it? As brother works against brother, as mother works against brother, as father works against son, an amazing twisted mess. You ever sat down, either by yourself or with a child, maybe a grandchild, and you've done a word search? You got those puzzles where all the different letters are scattered over the page and you have to find certain words. Maybe you've taken an I Spy book or a highlights magazine where you've got all these little pictures that are somewhere found in the picture. And so with all the different details and drawings, you're supposed to find these certain things within the picture. Perhaps one of the more popular books of this variety, at least for a while, was the Where's Waldo books. Remember those? Where's Waldo? He had a little stocking hat, and it was red and white. His shirt was red and white striped. His pants were bright blue, and he had these wire-rimmed glasses. And you'd have these pages that was filled with black and white and red and blue. And everybody was wearing something close to what Waldo was wearing, But you couldn't necessarily find them very easily because there was so much detail and so many things happening in this picture that it was hard to find Waldo. We kind of laugh at that when we think of trying to find something in a Where's Waldo book. But when it comes to real life, it's kind of scary when the busyness and the details cause us to miss what's truly important. You think of going down to the beach, and you're there at the ocean, and you're there with a crowd of people, you and your wife and your kids, or maybe you and another family, and you've got the kids, and you're enjoying the time, you enjoy a conversation, you go back, you look, you count, they're all there, you enjoy your conversation, you count, and one's missing. You start running up and down the beach, and you can't find that one. Why? Because in all the busyness and all the details, you just lost sight of one just for a moment. Maybe it's been at a shopping center. Maybe it's been at a mall. You've lost sight of that one thing that was really important because of all the details. I remember I wasn't there, but the story would always go around as the family got together back at my wife's family. And her dad's a pastor. And they would be at the church. And with all the different things that were happening at the church and all the different details that they had to take care of, oftentimes they would bring two cars. Mom would bring one car, Dad would bring one car, and then whoever was ready first would go home with Mom. Dad would finish talking, dealing with what he had to deal with, and he'd go home second. So they get home after a regular routine Sunday. They're sitting around the table. They pray. They look up. They look at each other and say, "Well, where's Andy?" Andy was about 2 years old, 3 years old at the time. And Mom says, "Well, I didn't see him after church. He didn't come home with me." Dad said, "What do you mean he didn't come home with you?" "He didn't come home with me." "Well, if he didn't come home with me and he didn't come home with you, he means he's..." And sure enough, they trek back to church. And there's little Andy. He had fallen asleep on a pew. And he's looking out the window, crying, rubbing his eyes, standing on top of something, trying to see. And finally, Dad opens the door and there's Andy. It's easy. They laugh about it today. But it's easy for us to lose sight of something really important when there's so many details crowding into our lives. That's kind of the way it is with this passage today. There's a lot of activity. The setting is familiar. We kind of just take some things for granted. But in the midst of all the different characters, the plots, the deceptions, the motives, one character is working more than all the others. You know who that character is. It's God. And I think we dare not miss this morning that this passage uniquely emphasizes the sovereignty of God at work, God working graciously, God's grace. There's several ways to break this down. I appreciated the way Alan Ross in his commentary breaks it down. Just listen to this flow of the story. This is worth just mentioning. First, we have God's people creating tension by attempting to set aside God's revealed will for their own will. And it moves to God's people often attempting to ensure God's plan for blessing by deceptive, manipulative measures. Moves forward, and God's people appear to achieve success through their manipulation. Then God's people eventually realize how wrong their actions are, and how the Lord overruled in their lives. God's people even bring danger on themselves because of their deceptive deeds. Then finally, God's people retain the promise of the blessing despite the predicaments that they bring on themselves because of their manipulation and deception. And that's a good way to frame it. Because as we're working through this passage, this is the people of God that we're dealing with. Sometimes it's Isaac as God's chosen. Sometimes it's Rebekah as God's person. Sometimes it's Jacob who's God's person, and all of them are bad. Esau doesn't belong to God by his own choice. He rejects God and rejects God's blessing. But there's not one in this story who's the good guy. And so as we look at this story, it's one part of the story of Jacob, a story that's not going to be resolved for many chapters. And yet it's a story unto itself. But it's left kind of open because here's this schnook that we've looked at for the past couple weeks who's blessed. And there's no reason he should be blessed. And he seems that he gets away with being wicked. So as we look at this morning, I'd like us to see that before we can submit to God's sovereign grace, we must be sure that we need it. And as we look at this story in the life of Jacob, what's established for Israel and what's established for the world is that this renegade group of people, whose father is Jacob, the cheater, the heel grabber, the one thing they don't deserve is God's blessing. But the one thing they have is God's blessing. And that's what makes them different. I love the Bible because one of the things that testifies to its veracity, for its truthfulness, is the fact that it doesn't gloss over its heroes, the sins and the weaknesses of its heroes. Here we have the founder of the faith, the one who in several chapters, his name is going to be changed from the heel grabber to the prince with God, Israel. And we see that this is the man that all of a nation looks up to and says, may our God be the God of Jacob, the God of Israel. Who is this Jacob? Why does he deserve God's blessing, God's favor? Because he's a schnook and he doesn't deserve it. But God chose to grant him with his sovereign grace. And so as we wrestle through this story, what it does is it lays the groundwork, it lays the foundation for the fact that this man deserves nothing of what God ultimately gives him. But it's the beginning of his realization. You know what? I need God's grace. I can't just take it for myself. And though he seems to get away with it at this point, it's the beginning of his undoing as he walks away and learns to depend on God. So the proposition this morning is simply, before we can submit to God's sovereign grace, we must be sure that we need it. And this passage gives us six reasons why we stand in need of God's grace. Six reasons. We're going to take about 4 or 5 minutes on each of them, and we're done this morning, all right? Reason number one, why you and I are dependent on God's grace. Reason number one is this: we need God's sovereign grace because man tends to be careless and profane. What we've been tracing throughout this book, all the way from chapter 3, is that when God made a good world, the good world went bad through one person, man, Adam, okay? And the Bible says that one sin spread sin to all of humanity. And so as we come to this story at this juncture in the book, the halfway point in the book, we see that Isaac the father is tainted by sin. We see that Rebekah the mother is tainted by sin. We see that Esau the oldest is tainted by sin. We see that Jacob the youngest is tainted by sin. But as the story begins to unfold, we're introduced first to Esau, the one who rejects God's blessing, the one in whom sin finds full fruition. It takes its bloom and flowers and grows fruit that's deadly, as he rejects the blessing of God. The passage is bookended by the activities of this man who loses the blessing. Earlier, he despised the birthright, back in chapter 25. That is, he willingly set aside his right to that which was rightfully his. The book of Hebrews, in chapter 12, verses 16 and 17, ties together both the birthright and the blessing. And in refusing the birthright, he set aside everything that was sacred and denied himself the blessing as well. He sold, and I like how Hebrews says it, he sold for a single bowl of stew his entire future. What an amazing thing. And so it looks like at this point in the story that man is just wholly given over to sin, that he's wholly sold out for the here and now and thoughtless entirely of the future. Well, you know what? God's grace is at work in the middle of this story. Jacob's not a lot different from Esau, and he tries to take the blessing for himself, not because of an eternal future with God. In fact, he even takes God's name in vain in this story. He says, God's blessed me. How have you done this so well? God blessed me. Your God, the God that you reverence, not me. In fact, later on in the story, we're going to see that when Jacob is called upon to make a vow with Laban, he swears by the fear of Isaac, by my daddy's God. He doesn't know God well enough to say, by my God, I vow and make a promise before you. So But we see at the beginning of this story that man is totally thoughtless of the future and totally thoughtless of God. He just wants what he can get here and now. At the beginning of this passage, he further despises God's call to be separate. That is, Esau despises God's call to be separate. You're to be holy. You're to be different. In fact, Abraham went so far back in chapter 24 as to send his servant away back to Paddan Aram, back to the place where he had come from, to secure a wife for Isaac, Rebecca. That's where Rebecca entered the story. He says, don't you dare take my son, because my son's in the place of God's blessing. This is where God wants me. I've labored long to get here. I've labored long to stay here. In fact, I've made mistakes going down to Egypt when I ought not to have. Don't you dare take my son away from the place of God's blessing. The whole point of that was because the people of that land were going to be cursed. And being cursed, they were going to be displaced by God, and that land was going to be given to Abraham. And he says, I want you to understand, I don't want my son to marry one of the people of the curse. I want him to be separate from the people of the curse so that he can inherit the blessing. There has to be a distinction. And so Isaac and Rebekah are the people of the blessing. They're people that are distinct in that land that will be cursed, that they might be blessed. Esau throws all of that away. The birthright he sells for one bowl of stew. And as the story begins, we see that he takes not just one wife, but two. And where did he find these wives? What was their nationality? It calls them Hittites. Down at the end of chapter 27, it calls them, they're the women of the land that is cursed. Okay, they're Canaanite women. Cain, it references back to Canaan in chapter 9, the one of Noah's sons who received the curse from God. And so Esau just blows by all of this stuff, all of his heritage, all of these things that were significant. And then at the end of the passage, he sees that these Canaanite women are a grief to mom and dad. In fact, it really only bothers him that dad's bothered by it. Who cares what mom thinks? His heart is set on pleasing his dad. He just wants to please daddy. And he sees that these Hittite women are a grief to his dad, and he says, you know what? Here's how I'll fix it. He wants me to be separate. He doesn't want me to have Canaanite wives. Here's what I'll do. I'll marry Ishmael's daughter. Why, that's daddy's brother. How can you be more separate than that? And the blessing is totally missed by Esau. The one who's rejected chooses the rejected son's daughter, and they're linked by marriage in a sad ending to a tale. As Esau tries to make up for all the wrong that he's done, and we find, like Isaiah 64 says, his attempt at righteousness were like filthy rags, putrid garments. He missed the whole point. So at the beginning of this story, we see that we need God's grace to be operative, because man left to himself is careless about God's blessing. And he's more inclined to be profane, to take the here and now, rather than to sacrifice everything to seek and to gain that which is holy, that which is eternal. Secondly, we need to realize our need of God's grace, because man tends to be blind and fleshly. Chapter 27, verse 1 says, Isaac was old and his eyes were dim. This physical condition is going to come into play in this story to a great degree. But it's not just a physical condition that Isaac has, is it? God had said back in chapter 25, verse 23, Rebekah, there's two nations who are warring in your womb. They're not just people, but they're peoples. They're nationalities. Okay? Their destinies are at stake. Let me tell you what's going to happen to these two peoples. The older one will serve the younger one. That's my plan. Okay, I'm telling you what's going on. I'm telling you what's going to happen. This is the way it will be. A couple verses later, verse 28 in chapter 25, it says, as the boys grew up, there was a daddy son, there was a mommy son. In fact, in chapter 27, we see it in verse 5. Isaac spoke to his son, verse 6. Rebekah spoke to her son. There's a daddy son, there's a mommy son. Isaac loved Esau. Why does Isaac love Esau, do you remember? Because of his food. Because he made good stew. All right? That's what his love was based on for his son. Rebekah loved Jacob. He was the smooth man. He was the house tender. And we're going to see at the end of this story, this man has to leave his house, has to leave his mama, has to cut the apron strings, and he's gone. Okay? And what she wanted to get and secure, she loses entirely because she tries to manipulate and take that. So we see the blind condition of Isaac in this story. He wants to bless Esau. Did Isaac know that Jacob would be the more blessed? Back in chapter 25, Isaac knew that the younger would be the ruler of the older, that the older would serve the younger. He was aware of these things. But because he loved Esau, because of the good food that he made, he determined in his heart, I don't care what God says, I'm going to... And it's pretty, we understand when we can put it in those terms. He didn't say it out loud, just like you and I would never say it out loud. But do we ever do the same thing? I don't care what God says, I'm going to... Man, don't you wish you could have eyes that would be open to this? We're blind. We're blinded by our own desires. We're blinded by our own wants. Don't you wish that we could have the eyes to see, you know what? Here's what's really happening. God says this, but I'm telling God no. You know what God gives you to give you clear vision like that? He gives you a wife. He gives you a husband. He gives you a friend. And they come up and they put their arm around you and they say, honey, I love you, but I'm just wondering about this. And what do? Thank you for pointing out this sin in my life. Shut up! Go away! Right? We don't want to see that much. We kind of like being blind. Isaac did too for much of the story. And it's not so much Rebecca's manipulation. It's not even Jacob's manipulation that sets up the tension in this story. Dad, the tension in this story is set up by a man who wanted to do his own thing rather than what God wanted him to do. Dad, that's a big responsibility that's put on your plate because Dad wasn't walking faithfully with God. He did earlier, but because he didn't continue that faithful walk with God, his whole family became a mess. And that's the tension that's set up for us in this story. Well, one sense is profoundly impaired. Isaac has chosen to live this life in light of his senses. We're going to see the senses come into play here in an amazing way. He came to base his affections on his appetites. 6 times this passage here refers to the delicious food, the delicious food, the delicious food. In fact, 3 times it connects the delicious food to the thing that Isaac loves. He loves his food. And because he loves his food, he loves his boy. Which does he love more? Kind of a pathetic story when it comes down to it. 3 times it says that Isaac loved his food. Here's the point, folks. What you desire fixes your loves. And what you love determines your destiny. Okay. All of us have innate desires. And if we allow those desires to control us, whichever desire we give free rein to, that's going to determine how our heart is bent, how our heart is fixed. And you as a Christian, as a child of God, the book of Galatians says, you have 2 competing bents inside of you, 2 competing desires. The flesh wanting to do flesh things, the spirit wanting to do spirit things. And whichever you give rein to, whichever you allow to take control of your life, it's going to bend your heart so that you only know how to love either fleshly things or spirit things. And whichever direction your heart is bent determines the destiny that your life will take. And because Isaac loved the things of the flesh, Isaac reaps a grievous harvest in this story. We see that Isaac's determination to bless Esau was based on his love for Esau, which was based on his desires for the flesh. I like how Kidner puts it. All five senses play a conspicuous part in this story, largely because of their fallibility. In this classic attempt to handle spiritual responsibilities by the light of nature, ironically, even the sense of taste on which Isaac prided himself gives him the wrong answer. The real scandal is Isaac's frivolity. His palate had long since governed his heart, and he now proposes to make it his arbiter between peoples and nations. Unfitness for office shows in every act of this sightless man, rejecting the evidence of his ears for that of his hands, following the promptings of his palate, and seeking inspiration through all things, his nose. So you're going to see, come here, my son, let me feel you. Sounds like Jacob, but feels like Esau. Come here, kiss me. Yeah, it's Esau, all right. But because he placed so much stock in his flesh, the flesh betrayed him. Not to over-spiritualize things, but we do the same thing, don't we? We live by sight rather than by faith. Oh, but we find that as we live by sight, we're living in our blindness. And so he says, listen, you gotta renew your mind because you're darkened, he says in the book of Ephesians. There's a hardness in your heart. If you go back living the way you used to live, you're blind. You can't see, the book of 2 Peter says. If you forget what you've been saved from, and you don't seek to add and to move on in your spiritual life, you too have become blind, dimmed, nearsighted, and you've lost sight of that for which you were saved, that for which you were redeemed, that for which I've designed you to accomplish. We see, thirdly, our need of God's sovereign grace because man tends to be anxious and manipulative. Rebecca wants the right thing in this story. Okay, she doesn't go about it the right way, but she wants the right thing. She had heard God say to her, the older will serve the younger. Now all of a sudden she's listening at the door of the tent. She hears Isaac tell Esau, go get something, bring it back, make it good, and I'll bless you. And all of a sudden, as Esau leaves in verse 6, her time is limited. The clock is ticking. I only have till Esau gets back for all of God's word to come true for my son. And what does she do? She bows down and prays, God, please make it a long, long time before he ever finds anything. She doesn't do anything. She says, Jacob, come here. We've got to do something. God's not going to so... Oh, she didn't say it. We wouldn't say it. God's not going to do anything, so I've got to... None of us cook goats, okay? But we do other stuff to fill in whatever the desires of our... She's wanting the right thing, but she goes about it the wrong way. When the situation appears desperate, she goes about securing God's blessing through fleshly means. She resorts to obtain the blessing by appealing to Isaac's senses, the good food that he loves. Let's trick his hands by making your hands hairy. Let's trick his nose by putting on the robes that your brother would wear. Ultimately, her resorting to the flesh makes her no different than Isaac. Isaac says, I know what God says, but I don't want what God says. Rebecca says, I want what God says, but he's not giving it to me the way that I want it, so I'm going to get it any way I can. And she resorts to the flesh. And neither one of these two are guiltless in this whole thing. Fleshly means are never the proper way to accomplish God's purposes. That's why when Moses, recognizing that God has gifted him and blessed him and put him in a unique place in all of Egypt, says, I'm going to rise up and lead my people out of here. And he strikes the Egyptian and he kills him. Then what's he got to do? He's got to go hide for 40 years. And then when God taps him on the shoulder and says, okay, now I'm ready. Me? You got the wrong guy. Okay. When David wants to bring the Ark of the Covenant, a good thing, to Jerusalem, a good thing. He does it by putting it on, not the priest's shoulders, the cart. Whenever we resort to do God's thing my way, you can mark it down. The result will be catastrophe. It's disaster. In the end, do Jacob and Rebekah get what they want? They do. They get the blessing. But here's the thing. They would have gotten the blessing anyway. They get nothing more than what God had promised they would get in the first place. But with that blessing, now all of a sudden they have other things they have to worry about. They get the fruit of hatred, of dissension, of separation. And at the end of the story, as Jacob goes away to Padan Aram, some 500 miles away, we're never told that Rebekah ever sees her son again. Was it worth it? They got what they wanted. They would have gotten it anyway. They just got other fruit that they weren't banking on. We need God's grace because man tends to be anxious and manipulative. It's easy when we're reading these stories to say, you know what? These people were really, really, really dumb. How could they be so dumb? God gives us these stories and says, it's not primarily about them. It's about you. Because this is how you operate, not just them. Fourthly, we need God's sovereign grace because we tend to be pragmatic and deceptive. Jacob is our primary example of this. He's not concerned about the strategy on moral grounds. When he asks Rebekah about it in verses 11 and 12, he says, what if it doesn't work? What if, in fact, Dad recognizes me as me? That's a bad thing. At the end of the story, the whole thing hinges on this. Esau says, you know what? Now I know who Jacob is. He's a schnook. He's a heel grabber. He's one who supplants and cheats, and he's done it to me twice. This is who he is, and this is how he rolls. What if Dad knows me as me? Then the real fear is I won't get a blessing. I'll get a curse because what I'm doing is unworthy of blessing and is absolutely worthy of the curse. His lies are passive to some degree. His mother puts the stuff in his hands. His mother puts the robes on him. His mother gives him the food to bring. He's just obeying mom, passively lying to Dad. But his lies are active. Who are you, my son? I'm Esau, your firstborn. Why are you here? Well, I've done everything you told me I'm supposed to do. How did you do it so quickly? Your God helped me. Man, don't you think that he'd have just a little bit of fear? But boldly, brazenly, brashly, marches right ahead. I'm your man, Dad. God helped me do it. Give me the blessing. Wow. Ultimately, we, like Jacob, are just as pragmatic and deceptive. His lies are blasphemous. In fact, he takes God's name and he says, this is your God. And this theme of God becoming the God of Jacob is going to be a theme that is transferred throughout this entire story. But God had promised Abraham back in chapter 17, verse 8, I will give the land to your children and I will be their God. Part of the blessing means that they get God for their own. God wasn't going to be done with Jacob at this point until God became the God of Jacob. In fact, in chapter 28, we're going to see Isaac or Jacob makes a promise to God. God, if you do this for me and you bring me back to the land safely, then you'll be my God. But until then, I don't know. I've got my doubts. In the end, Jacob gets what he wanted, but not more than he would have gotten otherwise. We're not told how, but God would have blessed him because that's what God had promised he would do. The little that is gained in this scenario is the true identity of himself as the cheat. This is essential for us to understand. In fact, it's essential for Israel. Go back to Deuteronomy chapter 7 for just a second. Why did God choose us? Because our father was worthy. He was Abraham. He was obedient. God owes us. We're different kind of people. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 6. You are a people that are separated to the Lord your God. You're holy is the word. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his treasured possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. It's not because you are more in number than any other people that the Lord has set his love on you and chose you. You were the fewest. You were the weakest. Verse 8. Here's why God chose you and loves you. It is because the Lord loves you and is keeping the oath that he swore to your fathers. The Lord has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Why does God love you? The answer to that is found in God, not in you. And over again, God has to remind his people, listen, you don't deserve this, but I love you. And because I have first loved you, won't you love me? Won't you love me with all of your heart? The fourth reason we need to rely on God's sovereignty is because we tend to be pragmatic, deceptive. Fifthly, we need God's grace because man tends towards remorse and revenge rather than repentance. At the end of this story, we're introduced. In fact, you see them crossing on the page there. Jacob leaves, Isaac, Esau comes, and they almost pass each other between the tents. When Esau gets in the tent, we see some of the outcroppings of what goes on. In this story, Jacob never has remorse. We're never, when he enters the tent again with Isaac, we don't ever hear him say, Dad, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. No remorse for Jacob. Esau comes into the tent. He finds out what's happened, and he gets bitter. In verse 34, it says, he cried with an exceedingly bitter cry, Dad, how could you? And the cry of his heart just overwhelms him, and he explodes. We see then at the end in verse 41, he says, here's what I'm going to do. I hate that brother of mine. I'm going to kill him. Okay. All of us who've ever had a brother have said that, okay? But none of us have meant it quite like Esau meant it of Jacob. I hate my brother. I wish I could kill him. You say they have your little sister. That's just normal. That's just how we talk. But we wouldn't ever really want to, like, raise a knife and kill him, okay? But Esau wanted to do that. That's where he was driven. And as he looks back and he does it, he wants the blessing. And Hebrews chapter 12, verse 16 and 17 says, though he cried for the blessing, it was a cry of remorse. I can't have what I want. He's the little child in the middle of the grocery store, lying on the floor, kicking and screaming, I want my Cocoa Puffs. It wasn't, I can't believe how stupid I was. God, forgive me. We're given one other picture of a character here. Go down to verse 33. Chapter 27, verse 33. Then Isaac trembled very violently. Isaac knew what he was doing. I want to bless my son Esau. I don't care what God says. I love him because of his food that he gives me. My heart is toward my son. He realizes, you know what? I've just blessed the wrong son. But I know in my heart that I've blessed the right son. And as he makes this realization, he trembles violently and he makes this public declaration. You know what? I've blessed him. I've been fighting God, but God won. He will be blessed. And at the end of the story in chapter 28, verses 3 and 4, he says, son, come here. Come here. You know what? May God Almighty bless you. My eyes were dark before this, but I'm looking at you, though I can't see you physically. I know exactly what I'm doing. Jacob, may God bless you. In verse 4, he says, in fact, may the blessing that God gave to Abraham, Jacob, be on you. That's because God's grace was at work in the life of his saint. It wasn't operative in Esau. Esau didn't belong to God. And we're left with a man who's repenting, no, remorseful. And then he wants revenge. We need God's grace in order to respond properly to God. Finally, we need God's sovereign grace because man's tendencies towards manipulation, towards carelessness, towards deception, all of our tendencies only complicate things. It's interesting in this story. The family's never seen together. Beginning of the story, we saw Esau and his wives. Then we move to Esau and Isaac. Then we move to Rebekah and Jacob. Then Isaac and Jacob. Isaac and Esau. Rebekah and Jacob. Rebekah and Isaac. Isaac and Jacob. Esau and his wives. But they're all working against each other. And they're all trying to accomplish their own little thing in their own little corner. You know what? We've been going through this series on Sunday mornings in Sunday school about how God changes people. And what we come to in this story of Jacob is just the beginning of a longer story of how God is changing Jacob. But before God can change Jacob, Jacob has to see Jacob for who Jacob is. And nothing does it better than this story. As we've been preparing as a family for the end of summer, and then preparing for school year, we've been cleaning things out. We've been in clean-out mode. Don't you love it when you get in clean-out mode? Everything goes to garage sales or dumpsters or a friend that fits the size clothes that you want to get away. So we've been in clean-out mode. And as we've gone through several different things this past week, my wife and I have been able to go through some memories. As we look at some different things, we read through some different things, we look at some different pictures, we're reminded, you know what? Those were tough times. In fact, part of the toughness of those times was what it brought out in my heart. When my back was pushed up against the wall, what came out from my life was absolutely disgusting. I'm not proud of it. But as we look what God's done through that and we see things on the other side, we say, you know what? That prepared me in a way that nothing else could have to be receptive to God's grace. Because up until that point, I thought I was pretty good. I thought I didn't need. I thought maybe I could. But God had to bring me face to face with who I am. And when once I saw who I was, then I was prepared to understand who God is. And folks, that's not just God's process for Jacob. That's God's process for you. You'll never be prepared for the goodness of your God until you're prepared to relinquish the badness of you. You'll never be prepared to submit to God's sovereign grace until you're sure that you need it. Have you ever realized your need for God to grace you undeservedly in your life? Colossians chapter 2, verse 6. As you therefore have received Christ Jesus the Lord, by grace through faith, now walk in Him that way. There was a time when you got down on your knees by God's grace and you said, you know what, I need you. That was to start a pattern, a habit in your life of daily saying, God, I need you. You say, you know what? I've blown it. God would never. Look at this story. Jacob, in the end, walks away with God's blessing. Because of Jacob? Not on your life. Because God is the kind of God that God is. Folks, you think that maybe you've blown it too big. The answer is you can't blow it too big. We're going to look at that this afternoon. I want you to taste and see. I want you to get your hands and sink your hands into the truth that God's love is broader than you can imagine, deeper than you can fall, higher than you can reach, and longer than you'll exist. Your God outlasts you. Let's pray.